I'm curious, do you have a really great BS detector? Maybe you're often skeptical of others. Are you really street smart? Would you say you're pretty self-assured? You often find yourself being the leader in the group. Maybe you even struggle to ask for help. Do you love a good challenge? Do you fight really hard for the causes you believe in? Do you have a great sense of humor? I bet you're a blast. You might have thought that these were all parts of your personality, but they might actually be coping mechanisms you've picked up over the course of your life, and they're having a huge impact on how you show up, especially on this motherhood journey. Are you curious to know more? You got to take my personality patterns quiz. Here's what's going on. When you were a child, whenever an experience overwhelmed your nervous system, you subconsciously built a defense against that overwhelm. Over time, those defenses became a habit, and then they became a pattern. And now as an adult, what we think of as our personality is often this defense pattern running the show. It's so interesting, right? There are 5 different personality patterns, and they're not personality types like the Enneagram or the Myers-Briggs, but rather they describe the safety strategies that we immediately go to when we start to feel overwhelmed. They don't describe who we are so much as what's blocking who we are. The good news is that once you take my quiz and learn about your pattern, you can learn skills to break out of that pattern, and then you can live and parent your kids as your true and authentic self. Click on the quiz link in the show notes or go to michellegrosser.com/quiz now to take my 2-minute personality pattern quiz. Welcome to the Calm Mom Podcast, the show for ambitious women ready to get off the hot mess express. I know you've got a lot going on. You work so hard. You're raising an incredible family. And sometimes it can be overwhelming. I'm your host, Michelle Grosser. I'm a certified master life coach, attorney, wife, and mom. And years ago, I was right where you are. I was running a busy law practice while raising a family, and I was on the fast track to burnout. I thought I just needed to be more organized or have better routines, but it was learning how to heal and regulate my nervous system that expanded my capacity to gracefully hold more of this big, beautiful life. You too are worthy of an extraordinary life in and beyond motherhood. Learning to be a calm, anchoring presence in your home and at work is going to be your superpower. If you're here to do the inner work that brings a sense of calm amidst the chaos, I'm here to join you on that journey. Each time you press play, your growth continues. So let's get at it. What's up, you guys? Michelle Grosser here. Welcome to the Calm Mom Podcast. We're talking about sleep today, and I've brought on the show Terry Crawley. She's a registered nurse. She's also a certified clinical sleep educator. So she's going to teach us about how we can get better sleep, how we can improve our sleep health and wellness. I love this episode so much because if you guys have been listening to this show, you know how much of a stickler I am for my sleep. I protect my sleep. I go to bed within the same, 15 minutes every night. I know how much it impacts all of my being, right? My physical health, my mental health, my emotional health, all of it is better after I've slept well. And I went for so many years without good sleep. A lot of us parents can probably resonate with that. So it's something that's super important to me. And I know it's important for my kids too, right? We all know what it's like to have the morning after when our kids have not slept well, but it's also so important for their development, right? Their brain development, their emotional, physical, and all of the different ways in which they're developing need proper sleep. So we're going to talk about it today. She's going to teach us how we can improve our sleep hygiene. She's going to bust some myths about sleep. And then she's going to talk to us about just the importance of sleep too, as we talked about our health, but also our growth and development, our safety, right? How it can improve our functioning, our productivity, our peak performance, everything in our quality of life. So enjoy this conversation with Terry. Terry, welcome to the Calm Mom Podcast. So grateful you've made some time to spend with us today.
Michelle, it's my pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So we are going to talk about sleep today, which is not only one of my favorite things to talk about, but it's one of my favorite things to do. But before we do that, tell everyone who you are and the work that you're doing these days. Just tell us a little bit about you.
Michelle, quite frankly, and simply put, I nag everyone to get sufficient sleep every single day. And the Better Sleep Council puts up with me and lets me do that and supports me. So to the Better Sleep Council, I'm eternally grateful. But I really am a fanatic about getting sufficient sleep. And hopefully I'll convince all your listeners today why that's the case. And maybe they'll be fanatics at the end of the show.
I love that. Okay. So here's where I want to start. I am someone who is a stickler about my sleep. Like for me, I know like it's such a marked difference if I don't get a good night's sleep or if I don't get 7 to 8 hours. I almost feel like intoxicated the next day. Like I just can't think. I can't function. I can't focus. Mm-hmm. Postpartum obviously was really tough for me for a lot of reasons, but for that reason. And then husband is like, oh, if I get 5 hours of sleep, like I'm good and I feel fine. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, and I want to ask you, we all have these perceptions of how much sleep we need or how much we need to like function. And I wonder how much of that is accurate or true that people need different amounts of sleep, or if we're just not accurate in our perceptions and everybody needs 7 or 8 hours. Like, what are your thoughts?
Well, here's how to answer this. There's a lot of research that shows adults do require 7 to 9 hours per night or per 24 hours, but and most of them do. Now, what's interesting is there is a genetic variation for short sleepers that do really well, say on 6, even 5 maybe, or less, wow, and suffer no repercussions, no consequences. But statistically, that compromises less than 1% of the total population. So I think there are a lot of short sleeper wannabes or people that aren't getting enough sleep, but have convinced themselves. And I see this time and time and time again. I go to major corporations and talk to people about sleep. And it's just surprising to hear people say, oh, I've learned how to get by. I may or may not be a short sleeper, but I've figured it out and now I'm used to it. Mm. And then 2 minutes later, they're telling me about their health problems. Then 2 minutes after that, they're telling me about, or longer, they're telling me about every other problem they're having. And I just want to pull my hair out because that's all related to a lack of sleep. So you don't get used to it. That does not happen. Now, people can lose their point of reference. Right. And forget what it's like to, you know, really function optimally. They forget. And then they get into this vicious cycle of not getting enough sleep and kind of slogging along. And they don't realize what it's doing to them. So most people, most adults, 7 to 9, kids, of course, need more. And you can find those, you know, little charts everywhere, like at the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, by age, showing how much kids need, because it's real important that they get that sleep.
Yeah. And I think I live in Miami. We were talking about this for a second, but when I moved here, I grew up in Maine. I moved to Miami, total culture shock in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one is that now all of my friend groups are like South American. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed as a cultural thing, like their kids just go to bed at 10, 10:30, mm-hmm. 11 PM. And part of my upbringing was like, we just went, like my parents put us to bed at like 7 PM, 7:30 PM when we were kids. And I wonder if you could speak to that a little more. Like, I think it's surprising to a lot of parents how much sleep their kids actually need.
I think a lot of it, see, this is a hard thing that I do, because I have to convince, I'm writing another children's book as we speak, and I'm trying to convince kids to get sleep. But gosh, if I don't have the parents' buy-in on how important it is, And kids are completely dependent on the grownups to make sure they get enough sleep. So that's my struggle. But we really, look at this way, look at sleep this way. It's the primary health habit. It comes first. And I can convince you of that because there's lots of research to support that. And diet and exercise are completely dependent on sleep. But sleep really has to be a health habit that is drilled into our children's head early, early, early. I mean, look at it. We can get young kids to understand about brushing their teeth. It's part of the routine. But if we can get the sleep conversation started early and really get kids to present it in a positive way, to be good role models, mm-hmm. and to talk about it in positive way, like don't ever make going to bed late a reward. Don't make going to the bedroom a punishment. You know, let's kind of reframe sleep so kids look at it in a positive light. But to really answer your question, I think we've got to make sure the kids are getting that adequate amount every single day and every day of the week. I know there's a lot of makeup sleep going on the weekends, which is fine. But the research is a little alarming now because it's demonstrating that we can't undo the damage during the week from a lack of sleep. And you will see some parallel epidemics where there are a lot of children battling and struggling with obesity now. And that is directly related to a lack of sleep. So, you know, I think we have to adjust bedtimes and sleep times to make sure, you know, whatever wake time is necessary for school or whatever, but make sure those kids are getting it, because you can put, if a child is getting sufficient sleep every night of the week and throughout their childhood, the trajectory in life is so much different, so much better. I mean, because sleep affects our learning, it affects our behavior, it affects how we perceive the world, our optimism, how we handle stress, our mood, our athleticism, completely dependent upon sleep. I mean, look at all of these things, and our diet. Our diets are affected by how much we sleep. If we don't get enough sleep, I don't know about you, but when I have those early morning flights, I'm walking through the airport, I am craving every Cinnabon and every donut. And normally I don't. I mean, I'm kind of really not, don't have a sweet tooth, but God, if I'm tired, I want fattening food. I want anything. And then I'll drink a lot of caffeine to stay awake. So, boy, if we get plenty of sleep, we're good to go. We make good decisions. We're happy. We have energy to work out, energy to get our steps in, all the good stuff.
Yes. Okay. So I hear all of that with our kids, and yeah. I couldn't agree more. I noticed it. I mean, mine are 5 and 6, but even just like the minute they wake up and their behavior in the morning, or just their frame of like mind where they're at in the morning, is so noticeable when they haven't had a good night's sleep. I'm curious, when you were mentioning the adults that you hear complaining about all these different things and not realizing that those are directly tied to sleep, what are some things that our listeners might be surprised to know are related to not getting enough rest that they might be completely unaware of?
Yeah, because most people think, well, so what, I'm sleepy, I can drink caffeine and get through that. It's so much more than that. Our relationships are affected. We're irritable. We're pessimistic. Think about, our job satisfaction. There have been studies on the degree of job satisfaction. Bullying is related to sleep deprivation, aggressive behavior, problems getting your point across. So we have decision-making problems. We have problems focusing. We're not productive. We're just not our best selves. In fact, there's a quote that I love. I got to find out who said this, but they said sufficient sleep is like Kevlar for the mind. Wow. So it really gives us resilience. It kind of makes us bulletproof to all the slings and arrows that come at us through everyday living. So you were really talking about not just feeling sleepy, but we're talking about how successful we are. See, I think for so long, we've looked at sufficient sleep as an obstacle to success. Like if you're getting sufficient sleep, you're not getting the work done. Right. And so many people trade those hours in the wrong way. They want, like, I need more waking hours, so I'll sleep less so I can get more done. But we do more, and we do it much, much better when we have plenty of sleep. So actually, sleep is your, you know, ticket to success, no matter what your definition of success is and how, you know, what your pathway is, what your age is.
Yeah.
Sleep just makes everything so much better. Even I think Christopher Barnes did a study on ethics. We're not as ethical when we're sleep deprived.
That's fascinating.
We have more on the job accidents when we're sleep deprived. We are more likely to abuse alcohol and drugs and really take risks that are not normal, you know, that we wouldn't normally take. Yeah. I always tell people, don't make important financial decisions if you're not well rested.
Right.
You can make huge mistakes.
Wow.
But what happens, here's the funny part, Michelle, that you can get a lack of insight into how sleep deprived you are, not only how you can kind of tell if you're tracking your sleep, mm-hmm. you can say, well, I'm down a couple of hours, but you don't realize how your performance has degraded and how your, you know, you're really how your cognitive functioning has been hampered.
Right.
So we're likely not to have a lot of insight. So that's where I say, be careful, have someone, you know, whether it's a family member, friend, colleague, whatever, you know, learn what sleep deprivation signs are in other people as well as yourself. So you can sort of stop and say, I'm not going to handle that right now. I'm too tired. And that's especially important when it comes to driving. I wow. hate the term drowsy driving because it sounds so benign and like, oh, you're drowsy. And no matter, people always giggle when they, oh yeah, I'm so tired. I don't even know where I was on the highway. It is as dangerous as drunk driving. Mm-hmm. And when we're sleep deprived, and like you were saying early on, you start to behave like an intoxicated person after a certain amount of time. I mean, that's what we do.
Yeah.
And no amount of turning up the radio, chewing on an ice or drinking a cold drink or anything can prevent a micro sleep. So again, that's another wow. safety thing, but you can see how pervasive it is and how impactful it is on every aspect of our lives.
Wow. Yeah. That's fascinating. Like our sleep is so foundational to every mm-hmm. other mm-hmm. function.
Yeah.
Oh man. So I want to give you an opportunity to bust a myth because I think a lot of people listening are like, okay, I know I'm sleep deprived, but like if I wake up, if I just have an extra cup of coffee, like mm-hmm. caffeine gives me energy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that that's true. So can you speak specifically to caffeine and yes. whether that's a good antidote to the tiredness we feel, if it actually gives us energy, and just maybe how that then also can contribute to like lack of sleep then the following night if we're taking
absolutely.
Okay.
And I think that that is a very prevalent myth, and it's, oh gosh, people, you can't substitute caffeine for sleep. It can't be done. Sleep just gives us so many benefits in so many ways without just getting into the deep science. I mean, our minds and bodies require it. It's a biological requirement. We need it for everything from our immune system functioning to heart health to obviously, I mean, now they're looking at sleep deprivation on a chronic basis, contributing to Alzheimer's disease and dementia. I mean, think about these things that are so impactful, but we have to look at people. If you need caffeine to get through the day, and I see the Starbucks lines, you know, the in the car lines. And I look down, and it's like 4 o'clock. And I'm thinking,
wow.
Oh, no, 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 you won't be able to sleep tonight. And I see the teenagers after the high school lets out going across the street to get their car. I mean, it's ubiquitous, but it's also, it's just a vicious cycle because that caffeine throughout the day to stay awake. I mean, if that's what you need, something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Something's wrong. I mean, yeah, I have to have 2 cups in the morning just to, you know, make sure I can get dressed and out the door. I mean, I'm just not a morning person. But after that, it's over. And that's the problem. If you need it all day, talk to your healthcare provider. In fact, this is a good time to remind everyone, sleep should be addressed, whether good or bad or in the middle or you don't know, addressed at every healthcare provider encounter. Because again, if you're drinking coffee all day long or any sort of caffeine energy drink to stay awake, you're not getting quality sleep. Mm-hmm. So here's where the cycle kicks in. Because then when you go to bed at night, you're not going to get, it's going to be tough to fall asleep and tough to stay asleep with all that caffeine going on, long half-life. So really stop and look and say, what's going on? Would it be better to take a short power nap in the afternoon? Like what's going on? Or people say, well, I don't have a sleep problem. I fall asleep the second my head hits the pillow. I fall asleep when I'm watching television at night. I fall asleep at the red light. I swear to you, I've heard that. And I just pull my hair out. But that means you're sleep deprived. Like what's going on? Either you're not getting that. Look at the hours. Are you getting the hours? Or if you're in bed, say you go to bed at a decent hour to wake up, you know, but to accommodate 7 to 9 hours and you're still tired, maybe there's something going on. There's many sleep disorders that can be effectively managed and treated. You just got to have to get the help you need if you're not sleeping well and do things on a daily basis. Just simple sleep hygiene things can help you get quality sleep at night so you're not completely dependent on caffeine.
I'm curious, do you have a really great BS detector? You're often skeptical of others. Are you really street smart? Would you say you're pretty self-assured? You often find yourself being the leader in the group. Maybe you even struggle to ask for help. Do you love a good challenge? Do you fight really hard for the causes you believe in? Do you have a great sense of humor? I bet you're a blast. You might have thought that these were all parts of your personality, but they might actually be coping mechanisms you've picked up over the course of your life, and they're having a huge impact on how you show up, especially on this motherhood journey. Are you curious to know more? You got to take my personality patterns quiz. Here's what's going on. When you were a child, whenever an experience overwhelmed your nervous system, you subconsciously built a defense against that overwhelm. Over time, those defenses became a habit, and then they became a pattern. And now as an adult, what we think of as our personality is often this defense pattern running the show. It's so interesting, right? There are 5 different personality patterns, and they're not personality types like the Enneagram or the Myers-Briggs, but rather they describe the safety strategies that we immediately go to when we start to feel overwhelmed. They don't describe who we are so much as what's blocking who we are. The good news is that once you take my quiz and learn about your pattern, you can learn skills to break out of that pattern, and then you can live and parent your kids as your true and authentic self. Click on the quiz link in the show notes or go to michellegroster.com/quiz now to take my 2-minute personality pattern quiz.
So I want to talk about some of the sleep hygiene habits that you can teach us about. But before we do that, I know that there are probably some moms listening that are like, yes and amen to all of this. And I have, you know, an 8-week-old that's waking me up every 3 hours and whatever reason, like toddlers in my bed or all these things. So talk to me a little bit about what happens, like when we get a poor night's sleep, if we're just in a season where that's not available to us to sleep through the night, what are some of the best ways that we can compensate for that? Is it power naps? Is it like, what do you recommend?
Yeah. And then depending on the time and the age of the kids or the situation in your life, power naps are fabulous. But first and foremost, be very unapologetic for your need for sleep. Ask for help. Sleep is like, it's just like food and water. We need it to survive. And I just never, ever want anyone to think that their character will be questioned, their willpower, their, you know, it is not a character issue. It is not an intestinal fortitude kind of situation. This is biology, and you're not a good partner. You're not a good parent. You're not a good person. You're unsafe in so many ways, and you're doing your mind and body harm when you don't get sleep. So I think if we flip the script and look at it in that light, that we'd be more willing to either ask our partner, family member, friend, someone help when I need it, or, you know, the baby's still young. I've been there, done that. It's so tough.
It's so hard.
But I would feel guilty. I would sit there and think, I'm not getting the house clean. That was really right before I started in sleep medicine. And so I think we've got to really, you know, make good decisions, and see, we don't when we're tired, but really, what can we delegate while the baby's young? Toddlers, be understanding, know the signs. And, you know, sometimes the little ones get hyper when they're tired instead of worn out. I mean, they're different attitudes. So I think we have to say, whoa, let's just be a little more self-aware and then look at kids in a light of, this may just be a lack of sleep. Let's look at this carefully. Let's talk to the pediatrician if this is ongoing. And I think just be willing to ask for help and get you through that because it's so hard. And I think, again, our culture, we have glamorized and idealized people that say they don't need a lot of sleep, or, oh, wow, the house is clean, the baby's small, and the, you know, laundry's done. Let it go. Let it go and really prioritize. And I would say reverse engineer your day. If this is an ongoing problem, really start with scheduling sleep. And everything after that. And again, I know that's so against the grain. I mean, I remember the weekends when I was a teenager, my father coming in the room going, come on. You're lazy, get up. And hey, teenagers need 9.25 hours of sleep every single night. Too many aren't getting that. We've got to look at our school start times to ensure they get healthy sleep. But even then, I talk to parents, I talk to administrators, policymakers who say, Terry, we're coddling our children by, you know, doing that. And I'm like, no. We don't coddle our children when we get, make sure they have breakfast and lunch and clothes on their back. And, you know, it's something we really have to look at carefully. Yes. But sleep hygiene, the Better Sleep Council has wonderful lists if you need to refer back to that. But you've got to have a bedtime routine. Okay. Adults need it. We've got to. It's so imperative. And studies have shown kids get better sleep. They get more sleep when they have a routine. It helps transition their bodies and minds from wakefulness to sleep. That structure provides comfort. I mean, there's a sense of security. Sleep is a tall order. You know, going to bed is a tall order for a little kid. It's like, you know, it's a lot to be separated from your parents and family, the whole thing. It's a lot. But if we present sleep in a positive light, you get to go to sleep, make bedtime routine, put some fun in it. You know, don't approach it with that grumpy irritableness, which is just a sign of being tired. But, you know, based on the child's age, can we empower them to say, you get to pick out your pajamas tonight? Yes. You get to pick out, you know, because the more we empower them in the process, the more buy-in and the more self-management techniques they'll learn. Definitely keep the lights low in the evening as you approach bed, and don't get them in the quiet zone and the calm zone and do a few yoga poses only to bring them into a incredibly brightly lit bathroom with the overhead lights and the 200 toys in the bathtub where they're just back to being, you know, wild.
Simulated.
Keep it calm, cool. And, you know, really kind of frame it into a bonding thing. One of my favorite bedtime activities is say, name three things. Put her three wonderful things that happened to you during your day. Always frame sleep as recharging. Kids kind of understand the battery recharging things. And it's all about a good day. Yeah. You know, it's that sleep at night, you've got to convince them. And it's a hard, I get it, but it's all about good days. Good nights are all about good days. And you know what? When they go to bed without a lot of bedtime resistance, when they're cooperative, when they stay in bed, all that good stuff. Michelle, I can't stress, you've got to celebrate their successes the next morning. And it can just be stickers. It can be a trip to the park after so many days, but really be very celebratory about a good night's sleep. And, you know, talk about it often during the day, not just at night, how important it is.
Yes.
And you know, just that kind of thing. And other things, make sure electronics are off. Ideally about an hour before bedtime for everyone in the family. And try to think of non-electronic kind of things to do at bedtime where then getting ready for bed isn't such a chore. Do you have time to sit down and do a little puzzle or little something, you know, simple arts and crafts or coloring, something that the grownups can do alongside the children? I mean, just quiet bedtime activities for adults that wake up in the middle of the night. Don't stress over it. It's normal to wake up several times during the night. It is. But if you start stressing about it, and we tend to stress about it in the middle of the night because we kind of have a little bit of different brain chemistry, and things that seem monumentally disastrous and terrifying at 3 a.m., when you wake up at 7 or 8 a.m., they're like, that's no big deal. Yes. So sleep kind of messes with our brains a little bit during the night while it's doing, it's trying to get its job done while you're wide awake, stressing out. So don't look at the clock. Don't pick up your phone if you're on the way to the restroom at 3 a.m. And don't just know that your body will eventually fall asleep as long as you stay calm and say this will pass. Just get really zen. And even when it comes to falling asleep, mind racing is a huge problem for many people as the head hits a pillow. At the end of the workday your workday, write out a to-do list, a to-worry-about list, but manually write it out on a piece of paper. And they found that things look a little more manageable and it's less likely to swirl in your head at bedtime. And if you do have a problem, say falling asleep, after 15 to 20 minutes, you can get up out of bed, do something quiet and relaxing, then go back to bed. We don't want to associate the bed with anything but romance and sleep. That should be it. I think it's real important to make sure the sleep environment is uncluttered. Okay. Dark, quiet. I mean, we see that written constantly about things, but do we actually take time maybe during the day to set the stage? I think that's important. I think a lot of consumers are sort of remiss in saying it's time to shop for a new mattress. The sleep surface is incredibly important. It shouldn't be overlooked. But I know there's that, a lot of people have said, oh God, I don't even want to go mattress shopping, and kind of give it that, ugh. It's actually pretty cool because there's so many new technologies, there's new materials, and that's another place you can lose your point of reference. Where I talked to a woman on the plane, of course, when I told her I was in sleep medicine as a nurse, she was like, oh, let me tell you about my sleep problems. She'd gone through every test, been all these sleep specialists. They couldn't find what's bothering her. So I said, I did the, you know, I just was dumb. And I said, how old's your mattress? And she said, she just sat there. You could see her calculating. She said, maybe 36 years old or something.
Wow.
And I said, here's my email, but email me, go get a new mattress and then email me and let me know how you're sleeping. I mean, that was all I could think of, but I got a great email from her. So don't overlook this simple stuff. And great information on getting all those kinds of things at the bettersleep.org website. And also with children, how can you further empower them? Are they age appropriate? Let's go shopping for your pillow. And see, that's a great, you know, or a pillowcase or a transitional object to sleep with. You know, anything to make it comforting, but also to have buy-in and some decision-making in a process that they really don't have much control over.
Right. Oh my gosh. So many good ideas there. I love it.
And get a lot of natural light during the day. That's okay. Really important. And I think that's another thing, natural light. And if you're not a person that works out religiously. And I'm glad I thought of this because people will tell me, well, I can't get up at 5 and 6 a.m. to go to the gym. I've got little ones. I've got all this stuff to do. I couldn't do it when my son was small. I mean, there was no way I was going to get up that early to go to the gym. Mm-hmm. And therefore, don't forgo exercise. There are a lot of evening exercise people, you know, people that do it at the evening, and it does not interfere. There've been with their sleep, there've been new studies saying, don't necessarily omit that because maybe the evening hours are your only hours. Give it a try. But if you haven't been exercising, I'm telling you, a 10-minute walk will contribute to sleep quality that night. And see what happens. The better your sleep quality, the better you'll sleep. And the next day you're going to feel even better. You're probably going to walk for 20 minutes. And the next day you're going to say, I don't need donuts. I'm going to walk for 30 minutes.
Yes.
And it all comes full circle.
It sure does. And that hits on, so we talk a lot on this podcast, like three of the pillars that I talk about a lot that we should incorporate every day are movement, stillness, and play. And really Love that's it. What I'm hearing you talk about, right? It's like movement and how that impacts our sleep. And then so much of the stillness we want to incorporate, like what a beautiful thing to incorporate as part of our bedtime routine, low stimulation, making sure we're being aware of the temperature and the clutter and all of these different things that can have an impact. Man, that's so interesting. Is there anything else on like the tech side or the stuff side, like bet, like mattress, pillows, sheets? I know there's a lot of like tracking devices. Are there, are there any things that are your favorites that if someone's wanting to improve their sleep, they might see quick wins using?
I think it's a matter of exploring. Some people have been, so I find it odd, a little bit against the sleep trackers, like that'll make you nervous and give you insomnia.
Okay.
I look, we count our calories, we count our steps. I think it's very helpful to look at your sleep on a daily basis. And there's so many ways to do it. If you don't want it on the wrist, there are rings, there are bedside things. There are bases, adjustable bases are so cool. Because you can put your mattress right on it. You don't need box springs, but it can elevate the head and feet. All kinds of different brands out there. But so many of them have incredible technology that can measure heart rate. It can give you so much, I think, wonderful information about your sleep. Because I think the more we get it, the more we get it. You know, I think when you see good numbers on with that technology, you'll put two and two together. Like I really feel better.
Yes.
And the materials, again, for mattresses, there's cooling gels, there's natural products that there's some mattresses go back to being flippable again. Some, I mean, there's kind of everything, something for everyone. Okay. So if you find yourself sleeping better in the recliner, in the living room, or in a hotel mattress, that's probably time to go shopping. So I do recommend that. But I think it's one of those, in some of my seminars, I tell people, I want you to get 7 to 9 hours, because I have a lot of chronic undersleepers I've run into, for 2 weeks. And tell me how you feel. Now, that might not erase all the sleep debt that people have accrued that do it. But typically, they feel so much better that they never go back to going in that sleep-deprived thing or writing it off or trying to power through it. So I would just say if I had a bottom line, make sufficient sleep. It has to be a personal, a family, a classroom, and a workplace value. And I think it should be really the first thing that you schedule every day and do everything around that as best you can, because I think literally our health, our mental health, our physical health, our quality of life, our longevity really depends upon that. And then you'll see everything falling into place. I mean, the last person that direct messaged me on social media said, I can't lose this weight. And knowing I was a nurse, you know, said, I hear you always talking about sleep, but I can't lose weight. And I said, well, are you sleeping? Mm-hmm. And then I get back, LOL, who has time? Oh. It's not realistic. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, good luck with the weight loss, because you've got to have that sleep for your metabolism to function as it should. Yes. And so, you see, so I mean, I think it's been contrary to hear that you should start with sleep and watch everything fall into place, because that's a little bit of turning things on their head. But I do recommend it.
Yes. And it comes against all of the things that we try to come against on this podcast, like the hustle culture and the busyness and all of those things. So you are speaking my language, and it's, you guys, it's coming from the experts. It's not even coming from me and my own experience, but from the sleep expert herself. So I'm so grateful. Last thing that's just kind of coming through for me now that you have me thinking, what is the average lifespan of a mattress? Because I think we bought our mattresses when we moved into this house, but does it vary by mattress, or is it like you should get it replaced every X number of years?
It could vary, but about 8 to 10 years.
Okay.
8 to 10 years. And I think back in the day when the warranties were for, 100 years or something crazy, people would get confused thinking, well, it should be comfortable that long. And no, 8 to 10 years. And think about the way your body changes. People lose weight, they gain weight. We lose subcutaneous fat and muscle every year as we age. And I did find a very abrupt, here I'd been blogging about it for years and thinking, oh, it's not happening to me. And all of a sudden one morning I woke up and I went, I need a softer mattress. And that's kind of, it changes, but there is definitely something for everyone. So take your time shopping for mattress, and of all the things in the world, like, don't walk in and go, I can't go over $999, it's an investment. I mean, you could fall in love with an inexpensive mattress. You could fall in love with an expensive one, but put that sleep surface, give it that thought. And I think when people find that sleep surface feels so good and they make the bed every day, at night when they walk in, they're in a totally different frame of mind. And I think, we always tell our patients, don't try to sleep. We say, relax, sleep will follow. And then that takes the onus off,
The pressure.
It's a very alerting try to sleep. But boy, when you walk into a bedroom that's been optimally, arranged and accessorized for sleep, you're going to find a huge difference in your life.
Yeah. It's like, make it like the spa where you walk in and you're just like, right? Like,
I had a wonderful workshop, great, great group of people who wanted to know a lot about sleep. And a woman at the end, she raised her hand and she said, well, we have a boa constrictor in an aquarium in the bedroom. And I was like, as a sleep expert, in my humble opinion, I couldn't even sleep thinking about her bedroom with this.
No. Oh, it was awful. I'm like terrified of snakes too. So that's like extra terrifying to me.
Get your clutter out, get your unfolded baskets of laundry out, get your exercise. Does it fall in line with sleep? No, if it's an exercise bike that you're not using, it's distracting. So again, calm, cool colors, no, you know, just it's for sleep and romance only, and make it a top priority.
Okay. I love that invitation. So all of us listening, I'm sure there are things we can declutter. I'm sure it's an invitation to do a lot of the things that we know, but we don't actually do, like putting our screens away and, you know, not working in bed and all of these things. So thank you. I learned so much today. Let everyone know where they can learn more about you, where you hang out. You mentioned your book. Tell us all the things.
So yes, I hang out. The Better Sleep Council has wonderful stuff on their great information on their website at bettersleep.org. It's a wonderful resource. And, you know, hop on there with the kids too and talk about sleep, get the conversation going. I'm on Twitter at Power of Sleep, and I'm on LinkedIn, and I am the annoying person on LinkedIn. I mean, there's sleep stuff all day, every day. And, but it's fun. I watch the latest, you know, sort of publications and research and journal articles, make sure it's out there for the world to see. So, yeah, that's, it's a good thing. And I hope everyone thinks about it a little bit more and makes it a priority.
Yes. Yes. So important. Well, thank you for sharing all of that wisdom and information with us. I'm so grateful for your time and for your investment in all of our sleep. So thank you.
Thanks for having me, Michelle. It's been a pleasure.
If you love Mommy's Podcast, leave a review.
If you enjoyed this episode, it would be so awesome if you could take a moment to subscribe and rate the podcast. And if you have just a few more seconds to leave a quick review, they really help to get this podcast out to other moms like you. I read every last review, and trust me, when it's late at night or early in the morning before my kids get up and I'm working on bringing you all of this content, your reviews are what keep me going. Leaving a review is truly the best way you can thank me. And of course, DM me on Instagram. I love to hear from you. Thanks for listening to another episode. Head over to the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at michellegrosser.com. where you'll find free resources and more ways to connect with me. If you love the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.